Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah, podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in, another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live from our new studios at Meat House Fork. With me today, Heath Elsenson, and I'm Dave Romero. And we're talking New Orleans Saints football, wall to wall. Heath, I think things just kind of got exciting. There's a lot of stuff to talk about, and I'm going to start off with something I always find strange, that when fans get on other fans about looking too far in the future or looking past the team. None of that's our business. That's the team's business. Our business is to talk Saints football. And so what I want to do is obviously there's a lot to talk about this game. There's a lot of things, a lot of stuff that's rearing its head. You know, I spoke a lot recently about the Saints interior offensive line, which seems to be becoming problematic. And then we're going to also talk about Taysom Hill. And again, this goes back to my initial conversation about, can we talk? Absolutely. This is what we're here to do. We're here to talk about what the Saints are, what they aren't, what they might be. It might be premature. I'm going to put some guidelines on it and say that, listen, I'm not ready to say that Taysom Hill is what he is and there's no future or there is a future or whatever. I'm going to talk about what I see right now. I looked at the game in depth and I have my ideas about Taysom Hill, and quite frankly, it's not as bad as what we initially thought. In my opinion, I think that he is a good player. I think that he's going to need some time to develop, and that might be a couple of years, like any quarterback with four starts. And my question is now, I'm still not sold. I'm not sold that he's going to be more than above average quarterback. I'm not sold that he is going to be the next great quarterback. So my point is, he's 30 years old. In a couple of years, when he meets his maximum capability, then he'll be 32, 33 years old. Are we in a position where we want to start developing a new quarterback? And if we do, do we not want to do that with a younger guy that has a higher ceiling? That's where I'm at.
Yeah. So as could be the theme with this entire game, when it comes to Taysom Hill, he's probably not as good as he looks at times, but he's not as bad as he looks at times either. At the end of the day, he is a guy that just has four starts. No matter how long he's been in the league, he literally, he doesn't even have the number of passes that a typical backup would have,
Right.
Like Luke McCown had more passes when he was with the Saints when Breeze was never getting hurt than Taysom Hill has had. So, do I know whether he's going to be a good quarterback? No. I mean, I like some of the things he does. I like what he brings to the table. But strangely, the Saints don't seem to be running the game plan with him at quarterback that I thought they were going to. And we can talk about that, but what was the actual question you asked?
Well, that's the thing, Heath, is I'm kind of trying to set the table here for just some Taysom Hill discussion. And it doesn't necessarily mean, because I almost feel like we're going to spend almost the entire show talking about Taysom Hill, and then as it proliferates throughout the entire team. Because what I'm basically saying is that I'm not blaming everything on Taysom Hill, but I'm not going to try to appease the listeners. I'm not going to try to appease the fans by telling them that Taysom Hill is either garbage or that he's actually the next guy to replace Drew Brees. My point is more that, we don't know, and we're not going to know at the end of the year. What we will know is that, hey, man, here's what he is. We've seen it. Now, can we build from that? Can we improve from that? My position is kind of – like, what I see is a guy that sometimes looks decisive and accurate, and then at other times looks indecisive and inaccurate. So what it tells me is that he's not quite ready. he's going to need development. And I'm like, well, yeah, everybody needs some development. He's 30 years old. The other thing that I see that element that it has become more clear to me is his mobility. And so I'm throwing a lot of stuff out on the table, Heath, so bear with me. Oh, yeah. And then we can just start picking it apart. Mm-hmm. In rewatching the game, and when I say I rewatch the game, I don't just put it on. When I watch the game on Sunday, I watch it like a fan. I watch it, and I'm watching the quarterback. But when I rewatch the game, I break it down. I look at positions. I look at how guys did things. I look at the offensive line, those different things. What I've noticed with Taysom Hill is that he is a tight end that can run real well. He's not an elusive guy. He's effective when you run that power because he runs like a power back. Yeah. But when you watch even Jalen Hurts, and then on Monday night I watched the kid Mark from Jackson. Baltimore, and you just realize it's two completely different levels. I watched the Saints defense become fundamentally unsound because they didn't quite know how to handle Hurts, right? And I saw the running backs be more effective than they should be because of what Jalen Hurts and his effect that Hill does not have on defenses. They don't have to worry about him in the same way. He's obviously, I'm not trying to suggest he's not a mobile quarterback, and I'm obviously not trying to suggest he's fast. He's not nearly as elusive as those guys, and we've seen it in the pocket. So I'm going to lay that table down and give you a chance to talk while I breathe a little bit.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. That's absolutely true. He's not the same kind of runner as those guys. You know, it's funny how you can go from, you know, boy, it's looking really good and he might be our future, and then one game and it's just like, just as a part of you just feels like, you know, there's no chance. This guy's never – you know, I want to go – kind of what I said in the past, though, we're doing two different things here right now. We're you know, you got Taysom Hill, the guy that's filling in for Breeze right now, and then you got Taysom Hill who might be the future next year. That's assuming Breeze even actually retires. Okay, we don't even really know that yet. It's not like that's already been announced and this is the plan. We don't even know that. So if we take a breath for a minute and step back and say, let's forget about Taysom Hill beyond this year. All right, let's not worry about whether he's the future and whether, you know, and let's just stick with Taysom Hill, the guy this year. Well, he's 3-1. He had a bad game yesterday, but quite frankly, how many guys were active on Sunday? 47. He was literally only 1/47th of the problem yesterday because I saw a whole lot of bad from a whole lot of people yesterday.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he certainly didn't lose us the game yesterday. That said, you know, so you think, okay, well, what about Winston? You know, we got another guy on this team who has a whole lot more skins on the wall, as they say, in game 70 starts, I believe it was, or whatever. Well, right. You know, look, I'm certainly not opposed to Jameis Winston getting a start. You know, I can draw a parallel to this to anybody that's followed LSU here this year. Same thing with Max Johnson. It's like, look, try them both out and see what they got. You know, Taysom's had four starts now. Give Winston a start and let's see if he's the future or what he looks like, you know. I think Sean Payton probably also looks at it. He's got 70 games on film to look at Winston.
Yes.
And he sees Winston in practice, and he saw Winston for a little bit at the end of the game that Breeze actually got hurt in when he finished out the game.
The 49er game.
Yeah, it didn't look that great. Now, I ain't gonna hold him to that too much, right? Come off the bench and go in there and – okay, so he didn't have to look spectacular or whatever. But, you know, he's got 70 games. You know, yes, I realize it wasn't in his system with the Saints and all that kind of stuff, but I think Sean Payton has a pretty good idea of what Jameis is and isn't capable of, what his strengths and his weaknesses are, whether he thinks he can fix them or he can't.
Right.
And he's right now, he wants to find out more about Taysom Hill. Now, interestingly, as I'm saying that kind of brings us back to that other discussion about Hill is the future. You know, but so we're heading into the Kansas City game now, and if Breeze isn't going to be ready, well, do you really want to put Winston in this week? You know, is this the week you'd want to make a change and say, oh, now we're going to take a look at what Winston has at starting?
You know,
I think that matters, you know?
I completely understand what you're saying, and I would normally – my first inclination when you said that was to lean back and kind of say, yeah, you're – but then wouldn't you apply the same logic to Hurts starting against the number one defense in NFL last week?
Yeah, or the example at LSU that I just gave, Johnson went to the swamp and made his first start.
Right. So
yeah.
I think the logic or at least recent history would tell us that, you know what, you put a guy in there and let him play. And obviously, you know, if they're playing against the best defense in the league, that it's going to be more of a struggle. But don't you want to see a guy play? Because this was the thing with Hill that I said is, after we got behind and I sent you guys messages like everybody else, we messaged throughout the game. And I said, now let's see what he can do when he's not playing at an advantage. He doesn't play with, he's not playing with the lead. They're not controlling the game with the running game. Now he has to be a quarterback. And to me, I'm going to say that I don't think he fared all that poorly. So now that's the, but here's the thing is that I believe maybe I'm being Dave Romero and I'm not giving you a straight answer. I'm not taking a side. I don't have that Tomas gene where I could say it's this or it's that. What I'm saying is I don't think he played that poorly when all the adversity was against him. And he had times when he played well, but then there were other times when he didn't, and which just kind of came to the conclusion that even though we now have an understanding he is an NFL quarterback, he still needs a ton of development, and who knows how much he will develop and when that will happen. And then when you start factoring, and this is why I said this isn't just about Hill, it's about the entire team. You have a roster right now that is, okay, you can make the argument that we're Super Bowl ready. And if, you know, we think once Breeze leaves, then, oh, what happens then? Well, if we have another quarterback, we could still at least contend for playoffs. We could still be a good team. We could still have a good future. But if you have a developmental quarterback, because I know this is going to sound negative, but it's the reality, is he has played the Atlanta Falcons twice, and he played a below average Eagle defense, although they have a good pass rush. That defense also had almost every one of their defensive backs hurt. And I'm not just talking about the four starters, meaning two corners and two safeties. Backups were hurt going into the game.
Yeah.
So they were already playing with their number three corner and four corner were already guys lower down the depth chart. Then they lost their two starters. And there comes a point when your expectation is, listen, you get the ball, get rid of the ball quick. Those cornerbacks are not going to challenge you the way true starters are. So you have to take all the – and honestly, Heath, I think I'm getting to the point where there's so much information. You need a professional GM/head coach, quarterback guy to start just deciphering all this information, because I honestly don't want to be hard on Hill, but at the same time, I also can't give him a ton of credit because there's some stuff I think he did good, some stuff he did bad. What does it all mean? And quite frankly, there's just so much information that somebody's going to have to sift through and come up with an answer.
Yeah, I mean, I like you, you know, when you sent that text, you said, well, now we're going to find out if he's a quarterback. And of course, in my fashion, when the Saints are doing poorly in a game, my answer was, he's not. And Lutz is not the future. A kicker, he needs to be cut. Morstead needs to be cut because he didn't down the ball on the 1 yard line. You know,
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Yeah,
I want to tell all my friends who listen to this podcast about my buddy Heath, because yesterday I try intentionally not to tweet. And not when stuff happens, not to have that instant angry reaction. And so Heath just lights everybody up. If it's incomplete pass, he lights them up. It's so, and we've learned to just be, that's just the way he, then the next day I come in with some feelings on Monday, before I actually watched the film, and I still was feeling negative. And I said something to him, and now he becomes Mr. Reasonable. And I feel like I feel like a jerk. So I just want to share that with all my friends out there, what I have to deal with Heath, but please continue.
Definitely a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde with me when it comes to the Saints. When they're playing and they're not doing well, it's pretty bad. But look, what I wanted to say with that is that I agree with you. I would say he just flat out proved me wrong, right? He played better in that situation than what I thought he was going to do. Well, he wasn't perfect, but he played better than I thought he was going to. I don't know, man. I really think the big underlying, storyline with this is that ultimately he stole a guy with four starts, and there was so much else that went wrong yesterday. Quite frankly, most of which I'm more concerned about than what's happening at the quarterback position right now. Because we do have another guy we can go to in the bullpen. We also hopefully getting Breeze back pretty soon, and it's going to be academic anyway, at least for the rest of this season. But some of those other things you started to touch on in your intro and all, we need to talk about, because those are more concerning to me than anything that happened with Hill yesterday. Outside of the fumble, God, come on, Taysom. He now has 10 fumbles on the season, man. He's only four away from Aaron Brooks's record of 14 in the season, and he started all 16 games of that season that he did that.
Yeah.
So that just goes to show you how bad it's been with Taysom. But offensive line, you know.
Yeah.
You touched on it, and now we really got to talk about it. Now, I will say this. The Eagles have a really good defensive line, right? We saw the stats yesterday. They lead the league in sacks and hurries and pressures and all this kind of stuff. So you were playing some real men over there on the other side of the ball.
And let me add to that, Heath, because that's a great point. Let me also add to that. You got to realize this is a 3-win team, and I'm talking about the Eagles. So it's not like they were playing with a bunch of leads. They're not like they're playing with a high-powered offense that they can pin their ears back. So you almost have to give them even more credit because they're playing – they're a bad team. Please continue. I just want to add that in there.
No, and also being a bad team, you know, we talked about this in the past. The Saints came in. This was Philadelphia Super Bowl, right? You got a chance to take down they got Jalen Hurts starting. The team's kind of reinvigorated. Let's see what the kid can do at quarterback. We got the Saints coming in. And so they're already kind of playing like a wounded animal anyway when you're 3-8-1 and everybody's on your back. And, you know, and like you said, you're absolutely right. So that makes the defensive line performance and all more impressive. However, you know, what it was able to do was expose some problems that were already there with the interior of the line that we were just able, A, to mask because the other team isn't as good up front, and B, because Breeze just erases a big part of those problems anyway, just with his play.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, go ahead.
Well, I was going to add to that is, and this is something that a conclusion I came up with, I think it was last week, is that, matter of fact, I posted several videos on Twitter, and my point in that video was that people like to give Breeze a hard time about his arm strength. And yes, listen, anybody who thinks that a guy who's now 41 years old has the same arm he did when he was 25, you're just fooling yourself. Having said that, is the reason Breeze doesn't go down the field is because he understands he doesn't consistently have the time to do that. And so what we're finding out is that may be the case. The reason why the Saints run this really quick, really fast, really precise passing game is because their interior offensive line will not consistently hold up. It's not like they're horrible. They're very inconsistent.
Yeah. I mean, I would say on the whole, they're far more good than they are bad. But, you know, Pete is very inconsistent. And then we're having struggle on the other side. I you know, with Easton and Ruiz kind of platooning over on the other side, it's obvious that, you know, at first I thought maybe, well, you know, the kid's a rookie, and so Easton's been playing pretty well, so they just giving him some time. I think it's a little more than that. And now that I've looked closer at it, Easton has struggled over there as well. After having played pretty good on the left side, filling in for Pete. So I don't, you know, I it's, I imagine it's probably hard. You got to be pretty talented to flip sides as it is anyway. We've seen a lot of guys that just can't really do that. Pete being one of them.
Now, and one of the other things too is that you just brought up an idea that I haven't really considered is you're saying, hey, man, you got to be pretty talented to play both sides. But he played pretty well when he covered for Pete. You may find that Easton is just simply better on the left side than he is the right.
Sure.
So that might be a consideration as well.
Yeah.
And listen, I don't know. I can't speak for you, but while I beat up Ruiz, you know, I'm going to make the point that again, he is a rookie. Offensive linemen do take time not only to develop, but strengthen all the different things you need in the center. And it has been brought up that he has personally said he is not a guard. Okay.
Yeah.
If we would have had a preseason, because I'm actually arguing with things that I've read, and the point is like, yeah, we may not have had a preseason, but we're now, you know, 12 games into the season or 13. Yeah. 12 games into, or is it 13? Doesn't matter. We're well into the season. He's had plenty, but what they would have more than likely done if he had a preseason is he would have been your starting center and McCoy would be your starting right guard. And I don't know if we wouldn't be a better offensive line right now if that were the case.
Yeah, I think that's the situation. They really wanted Ruiz to come in and become the center and move McCoy to guard. But with the abbreviated practices and all, and also Ruiz was hurt on top of that. So his was even more abbreviated. They had to say, look, we're going to put him at guard, and if we have a struggle at that one position, it's better than swapping him right now and then struggling at both positions because McCoy hasn't had any time to adjust the guard.
Right.
And so hopefully this next offseason is something more close to normal, and they'll be able to get that done and come in the next season. Boy, because I'm still thinking back to that play when McCoy was outrunning Kamara down the sideline and thinking about what it's like to have him at guard pulling on a regular basis.
Right.
He's going to be a monster.
And that athleticism, absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, and then the defense, right? So the offensive line struggled, and then the defense, that defense that we've been so praising over the last 5 to 6 weeks or whatever it's been, that they really kind of turned things around. Boy, I don't know where they were yesterday. But, you know, in fact, the whole team was just out of sync yesterday. Just everything felt off on the entire team. And I don't know if it was me or if it was the team legitimately giving me that feeling or what, but it's, you know, I'm talking about from play calling to the performance on all phases of the game. You know, Lutz, I mean, I'm not going to give him too much slack on the 57-yarder. That's still a low-percentage kick, even though I think Lutz is capable. But 40, I mean, he's usually automatic in that situation. And in the end, that's all that was the difference in this game after all of that.
Yeah.
You know.
Heath, when you look at the game in its entirety, there were a lot of things that, man, had to really go the Eagles' way. And it may not seem like that, but the fact of the matter is there were just a lot of things that had to go the Eagles' way in order for them to pull off this victory. Now, there were opportunities. How did the Saints not recover that onside kick?
Wow.
I do not understand.
I know.
I do not understand.
Yeah. That's those ones when you're just getting all the bounces, you know, like you say. Hell, the interception. Ricochet, you know, the way that ball came off, the fact that guy was even able to catch it, I mean, that's just kind of the day it was, like you said. A lot of things just bounced the right way for Philadelphia.
Right. The reason it was intercepted is because Hill threw it about 500 miles an hour at Kamara, and how the guy was able to react and intercept it, and it didn't go flying out of bounds. Or, you know, let's also look at the C.D. Deuce, Gardner Johnson. I mean, he has so many names, I can't remember what to call him. I call him number 22. Did he have some type of, does he have some type of maybe embolism or something? I mean, did you see him try to catch that ball? That's a professional athlete, a very athletic, talented guy. But if he steps in front of that ball and I mean, it wasn't like one of those things where, you know, sometimes a defender jumps in front and gets a fingertip on it and he was never going to catch it. But that was a situation where, I mean, there were so many things. The run at the end of the first half. Now, you know, I'm thinking about it, and we're gonna call this segment just like "What if?" But what about? But what, you know, is that run? Malcolm Jenkins misses a tackle. Everything else failed. So I'm not trying to blame just Malcolm Jenkins, and I'm talking about right before halftime, the long run for a touchdown.
Right.
But Malcolm Jenkins, you need to be back there to, at the bare minimum, run the guy out of bounds after a 40-yard gain. You know, you do not allow an 80-yard touchdown run. And he comes up and just misses the tackle, and here we are. But having said that, we got the ball back. Then we punted it away, and rewatching, maybe I was in such disarray that I didn't realize they went all the way down the field and missed a field goal that was less than an extra point.
Yeah.
So, you know, we things went against us, things went for us. It was just – but even Coach Payton pointed out that he didn't feel like the team was up. And now look, I'm going to start speaking for the team, but you have to believe that what goes through my mind goes through the player's mind sometimes. You're like, man, you know, like we're in a situation, if we could get some rest. And then all of a sudden these players are looking at it like, man, if I don't come up so hard on this run and play – I'll just let somebody else tackle him, and then maybe I can save my shoulder. Maybe my elbow won't hurt quite as much, you know, Monday morning. Maybe that knee that I have that's like it's aching. I'll just take this play off. And all of a sudden you're thinking that the Eagles are going to roll over and just give you the game, and then you don't play as hard as you normally do. That's the only thing that you can imagine, and that's what goes through my mind, and I believe it goes through players' minds as well. It's like, listen, today I'm not going to fill that gap quite as hard as I usually do. You know, I'm not going to run over there and help this guy as much as I normally do, because I'm just going to take this game. I'm going to play it at about 75% today. And if you get a handful of people doing that, then all of a sudden you realize, man, this team is not 75% or 25% not as good as us. So when you're playing at 75, these guys are playing at 85 and they're going to beat you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just goes to show, right? Any team in the NFL can beat any other one on any given day. You know, right. We already know that. This is not like we went to play some junior college team or whatever. You know, in the end, they're still an NFL team, and they still have ability. Yeah, as far as Gardner Johnson, man, when I saw the replay on that, you know what it made me think of? You know when you're a kid and you learn how to play baseball and they're trying to teach you when the ball's above your waist, you don't try to catch it underhanded, you know?
Right, yes, yes.
And it was like you don't try a horizontal scoop, you know, basket catch or whatever. I mean, it literally went between his two elbows.
Right.
You know, I mean, not only did he try to do a basket catch, but he had his arms about as far apart as he could put them. It went right between his elbows, so –
I mean, and the other thing too, Heath, is, and this is why I'm saying, I don't know if he had it like an aneurysm or, I mean, he didn't even, it'd be different if he was closing his elbows. I mean, he like literally like made a circle around the ball to let, you know, you ever play that when you were a kid, you know, you don't have a basketball goal. So you put your arms like this and the guy throws the ball and you just kind of
move them. You move them where the ball actually goes.
So, oh, right through the middle.
No, I know that was. You know, but it's and you know, you made a comment earlier. I think it was somebody else missed an interception or whatever, and I said you got to catch him. And you said, well, that's why they're not wide receivers, right? And
right.
That's true. But you do spend time as a defensive back catching the ball, right? It is a part of the game that you play.
Well, and now here's the thing. I want to clarify that. That comment was like, again, that was a text, and it was on that play, and it wasn't. That comment wasn't like, well, you know, that's why he's not a wide receiver. It was more like, well, there's why he's not a wide receiver. You know,
it's
tone takes a big, makes a big part of how things are taken. I'm like, there's the reason he plays defense, you know?
Yeah.
So, okay. So I think we have a ton of stuff to do. And I think we kind of taken this free form tone to the show. I want to go back a little bit to the offensive line and how it relates to Drew Brees and how it relates to the playoffs, because I have now come to realize that I believe wholeheartedly that the way that Brees, and I don't know if I'm going to tie something else into this, the Saints beat the brakes off of Tampa Bay, you know, several weeks back, maybe 4 weeks, 5 weeks ago. Then they played the 49ers who are decimated. Then they played Atlanta twice who decimated. They played the Broncos without a quarterback, and then they played Philadelphia. And I have some concerns now that, you know, we played a really good game against Tampa Bay, and are we really as good as we think we are right now? And what keeps happening, or at least happened last year, let me not say – I want to be precise with my words. Last year, we blamed Drew Brees for a lot of stuff, but the offensive line had the same problems that we saw yesterday. And now the situation is if you get into a game where the other team gets scores on you, and all of a sudden, you know, it's, Drew Brees will get that quick game going. And if we get an offense, a defense that can put a pass rush on the Saints, I am now very concerned about the interior of the defensive line. And I believe, I know I'm saying all this and I'm just basically restarting the same subject. I'm concerned how it's going to affect us in the playoffs, because I can almost guarantee you that most of the teams we're going to run into will have an interior defensive line that can take advantage of those types of issues. I just realized I thought I was on the track to something profound, and I just opened up the same concern. But I think I'm doubly concerned about this interior offensive line and how, more than anything, look, we're going to play against Kansas City. I believe we're going to play great. I believe we're going to come out. I believe the defense will play great. And when I say great, I'm saying relative to who we're playing. And I can see the offense, because Kansas City's defense is not that good. So no. But a lot of pressure will be on Taysom Hill to keep up scoring. And I remember how we used to talk about it back in the day whenever our offense was amazing and say, man, we take him out to the middle of the pool and we drown him. And that could end up being what happens to Taysom. Yeah, long as everything's cool, we keep it all calm, we keep it everything. You know, when things start flying, then you start feeling the pressure to make a play.
Yeah,
that's when bad things happen.
Yeah, I think, you know, as far as the offensive line is concerned, I guess the 11 broken ribs and the punctured lung was a clue all along. And, you know, but somebody's going to have to step up there, right? Sean Payton already called out Pete.
Yeah.
And somebody on the other side, whether it's Ruiz or Easton or, you know, you would think it'd be Easton with more experience. Maybe he would be able to step up and elevate the level of play. Hey, even Armstead didn't look good yesterday. Armstead got beat several times. Now, I don't know if that has – something to do with what Pete was doing, and he's maybe trying to help out and do more than he, you know,
Let me add to that, Heath. Someone pointed out it's my original idea, but, you know, it wasn't that long ago. He actually had COVID. So could his strength be down a little bit? Can his endurance be down? You know, so to me, as solid as he is, there was obviously something not quite right with him, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I forgot about that. That's true. Yeah, he just had an unarmed stead-like game. But, I think this team will play better, okay? They're not, you know, again, I'll go back to what I always say, really, said at the beginning. You're not as good as the best you looked, and you're not as bad as the worst. And so a few things that are going to change next week, like you said, Hurts really gave them an issue, man. They just did not know how to defend that. They got a little better in the second half, particularly right after the halftime. They came out and looked like all of a sudden like they knew what they were doing. Mahomes is not that kind of quarterback, right? You got to worry about him in other ways, but you don't have to worry about him in the way that Hurts was hurting us yesterday, running out on the edge. And so, obviously, that'll be – now, you got to worry about Tyreek Hill streaking 70 yards downfield, and Mahomes throwing one up after he's run around for about 10 seconds in the backfield.
Yes.
So, different problems, but I think they'll look better. They're not – this team's not going to play – you know, I can't help but wonder if they weren't looking past Philadelphia, right? You kind of alluded to this in the beginning about teams looking past of it, but, you know – you got 3-8-1 Philadelphia coming up with a rookie start, and then the following week it's all on the line against Mahomes, you know, the big matchup that everybody's been looking at for several weeks now. Those guys do that, man. You know,
absolutely.
You can't help it. They're human, you know.
And that goes back to what I was saying about kind of saving himself up. You know, my elbow's been, you know, at the time of the year, everybody's banged up. And so, you know, I agree completely that this team was like, I'm not going to say reading the press clippings. At the end of the day, you're a good team. You know you're a good team. Nobody needs a press clipping to tell you how good you are. And they're looking at that calendar just like every fan does. They're human. And they have a 3-win team. Then they have Kansas City where they can have a chance to prove that they are the best team in the league. Then you have two games against losing teams again, right? I mean, what do we have? We have the Panthers. And then we have the Vikings,
yeah.
Okay, so.
A little bit of a history there, yeah.
That's not a gimme game either, okay? So the point is that, man, I don't want to get scary with you here, but now we're talking about losing to last week to Philadelphia. Then you go to Kansas City, and you know, I'm not ready. I don't believe Kansas City is just going to – this is, you know, they have a 90% chance of winning. I think the Saints can win this game. Having said that, if they do lose and then they have to go play, now you're starting to talk about, man, I need to go look at the standings and see where we are for the second seed.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was trying to look up real quick and see what Tampa has left too, because, you know, had we won yesterday, we essentially had locked up the division, right? Because with only three games left in a more than a, you know, 3-game plus a tiebreaker lead now. You know, they won, and
I'm pretty sure that for Tampa Bay to overtake us, we'd have to lose out and they would have to win out. And I don't have it in front of me, but I'm pretty confident that's the case. What is the division?
Well,
you got the Central right now is leading, meaning the Packers are leading. The Saints are in two. You know, the East is going to be four. And so what –
you got Arizona now over
– the West. Okay. Yeah. And I'm sorry. I had just my normal brain meltdown there. I'm trying to think. Leading that division over there is either –
I'm sorry. What am I talking about? No, the Rams or the Seahawks are
– right.
Are actually leading.
I'm going to throw my shoulder out, patting myself on the back. But I said the team that I'm the most worried about is the Rams, and that was before I really realized the issues we're having on the interior. The Rams are always a tough matchup for us simply because of their interior pass rush. You know, Aaron Donald is hard for everyone to deal with, but particularly if the Saints can't control him, then that causes us all kinds of offensive problems. So, yeah. But anyway, I'm not sure what their record is, meaning either the Rams or Seattle, and they're not far back.
They're only one game back. They're 9-4, so they're only one game back. Go ahead.
I was going to say, not to mention, though, they all play each other in the last three games, because I was looking at that, because at one point we would win the number one seed if we finished in a three-way tie with the Packers and let's say Seattle at the time was leading it. And when I went and looked through the schedule, I'm like, there's no way Seattle wins out with all these games. They play the Rams. They play Arizona. They play. So the point is those guys in the West have a pretty rough schedule themselves. So I don't expect any of them to win out. And not to mention, none of them are good enough to win out. The Rams are not good enough to win out. Neither is Seattle.
Right. So you're two games in the tiebreaker ahead of Tampa. Tampa has the Falcons twice and the Lions in their last three games.
Oh, boy.
So pretty favorable there. So the Saints are going to have to, you know, even if they would lose to Kansas, you know, they could lose to Kansas City and they could even still lose to Minnesota and still have the tiebreaker. Like you said, they just can't lose out. If they lose out, then, you know, but I don't expect that to happen.
And let me put stretch, this, but. I always put this logic on it. Heath, if they lose out, the Saints lose out, they weren't really that good to begin with. So nobody's, you know what I'm saying?
That's going to depend on how long they leave Breeze out. When is he ready, and or when are they willing to, you know, say that they're not rushing him and they've given him enough time to heal and all. Now, that could change dramatically if he misses the Kansas City game and you lose it, right?
Now, did you hear the reports that he threw last week and experienced a lot of pain? So that's where the negative reports started coming out that they don't expect him to be back, for Kansas City.
Right. I've kind of already – to me, it was already a bit of a foregone conclusion that he was not going to be back for Kansas City. However, it would be once you get behind that, especially if the Saints come out and don't play very well or whatever, or if Hill doesn't play or whoever starts. I assume it's going to be Hill. I think Peyton's pretty much already said it's going to be Hill. That's us speculating about Winston and all. Winston's probably not even – you know, that's another thing. The comment that Peyton made about – having promised Hill a chance when they signed a new contract and he knows what Winston can do and all of that or whatever.
Hey, let me set that up real quick. I just want to make sure everybody listening understands that Peyton had a press conference and pretty much outwardly came out and said, hey, look, I made a commitment to Hill to give him a chance. And so now please continue on. I just want to make sure everybody understands that so they understand the context in which you're talking.
Yeah. So anyway, he's, you know, after making that comment about he loves what we've seen out of Winston, but he made the promise to Hill to give him the chance. You know, a more cynical view of that is, I'm certainly not going to say anything disparaging about Winston. I don't have to, right? I can say, oh yeah, I love what I've seen out of Winston, but I promised Hill, and I don't have to answer the question about, I ain't seen anything out of Winston that makes me want to start him over Hill.
Right.
I'm not saying that's the case, but that's a cynical other potential scenario.
Yes.
That quite frankly, he has not seen what he wanted to see out of Winston. And, you know, I mean, I don't know that. Like I said, I'm not suggesting that that's, but it's a possibility.
Yes.
But well, if Hill doesn't play well this next, or if the team, I don't even say Hill, if the team comes out and doesn't play well, they lose to Kansas City. Obviously, that's got to change the timetable in the team's mind about, you know, hey, you know, we can afford to let Breeze out. It doesn't matter. The seeding doesn't necessarily matter all that much at the end of the day.
I agree with that this year.
It's just a matter of getting into the playoffs, get Breeze back healthy, and we can deal with whatever else we have to deal with. Well, that might start to change a little bit. You drop a second game in a row.
Right. Well, and then what I would be most concerned about with Breeze is because I, looking at the game today, I kind of looked at it with that eye saying, man, look at that interior offensive line. This particular play, if Breeze was in there, well, there were a couple plays. Breeze is going to get rid of the ball quick. He's going to see a blitz, but you do still take a couple of shots. And if those shots cause him to now miss a playoff game, I mean, we it's definitely a catch-22. I get you need to get him back, but I also get that he is injured in a way that it's not just it could set the team back to the point where you're going into the playoffs with, you know, a below-average five starts in his resume quarterback into the playoffs. And you know, man, I don't know, man. All the things I thought I knew, and this goes back to a comment you made. when you win in, you can't be beat. Nobody can handle this offense. Nobody can handle this defense. I'm making jokes. I'm calling Davenport the franchise. When he's on there, that's good for 6 additional sacks a game. I'm making jokes on Twitter. And all of a sudden, you lose a game, and you don't understand how you ever win another game with all these bums on the team. It just, you know, it's amazing. Yeah. How I think that's the one quality any coach has to have over anything else. Like, man, he doesn't know any football. He's really not good with the cap, but man, he doesn't freak out when you lose one game and cut every player on the team. Could you imagine if we were the coaches?
Yeah.
Well, bring up the kid we got from what's it called? Over at the Broncos. Bring him up. Just put him in. Let's go. Yeah. I'm tired of all this. That's 2 incomplete passes in a row. Get him out of there.
Yeah, I give them a lot of credit. Every time I watch a football game, I have a bigger appreciation for coaches that don't go apeshit on the sideline, right? there's no way that I would not have decked a referee already in my career and been kicked out of the league. You know, you're going to get this call right, you so-and-so. Or, you know, I mean, yeah, there's no way.
Heath, the thing that's making me laugh the most is I'm literally sitting in the booth imagining myself looking down onto the field as all the players are holding you back, and you got the belt on with the headset, you know, and the polo shirt, and they holding you back, and you dog cussing the referee, man, and trying to fight him. I can see it. I could totally see him. And then the dude to hold you back, you cut him on the spot. I mean, I love you out, you out, you out. Put it. I don't care. Bring in the JV. It's over. So. Yeah. Anyway,
you would literally find out what happens when they go to somebody in the stands to see if they could play quarterback. You know, it's like,
right. Yeah. The first time this ever happened in the NFL, the coach, Elson Son, has decided to bring in a player who has a high school starting record of 7-3. You know,
yeah. God. I know. But seriously, I don't know how, you know, those guys keep I guess it's easy to keep you cool too when you're making millions and millions of dollars. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure they want to win, you know, but right after the game, you got Cam Jordan out there, you know, yucking it up with the other teammates and all after you just got your ass handed to you. And it's like, you know, I was that kid when I played baseball when I was a kid, you had to line up and walk and slap hands. You know, I used to refuse to go over there. You know what I mean? Or take a swing at somebody that if he smiled at you the wrong way, you know, gave you that.
Yeah. Oh, that was an arrogant smile. That wasn't like, hey, good game smile. That was I made you look foolish smile.
Yeah. I rolled in the dirt more than once in those situations when I was a kid.
The funny thing about it is, and I don't know if it's funny, the one thing that is lost on this is how emotionally invested fans of the team can be and are, as opposed to the players. The players, man, I'm not saying they don't want to win, but when the game's over, I mean, think about how many times you've played pickup games. You know what I'm saying? How many times you've went to the gym and played basketball. When you lose, you're over there like, hey, man, you want to get a beer later? You know, like most of them, they mad for a little while. The super competitive guys are mad. But when they get up, and half the time, I believe it in my heart, when they get up to the podium to talk to the media, they're already over it. Now they're like, oh, God, here we go. You know, today it was just, we didn't play our best football. And they, you know, they got a little list on their hand and they slide it in their pocket with all the standard answers that are like, yeah, you know, it was a tough loss today. I just got to play better, you know, and they're like,
right.
You know, it's just a job to them. And again, that doesn't mean that some of them don't care more than others, you know, but at the same time, I don't believe that they are nearly as upset as the fans are. Not no, nearly.
No. So. No.
Anyway, what else do we need to cover?
You know, I mean, we could go on and on with the bad and ugly again. I don't know, man. Like I said, I really think it'll be better next, you know. In other words, something happened with this team this week. I think this is, you know, this is the aberration or whatever. Although the Saints kind of tend to do this at least once a season, it seems like, you know.
It's almost a given.
They just totally play down to the competition and lose a game they had no business losing. Let's hope they get it out of their system. They come back next week and you know, get back to playing Saints football. Well,
Heath, I'm going to say this too. Like I used to say when people are like, oh, the Saints are notorious slow starters, I'm like, I'd roll my eyes and say, you know what, just because 3 years in a row they went, you know, 1-3 or 0-3, the schedule, the way everything falls, come on. Now it is it's almost – scientific proof, evidence that the Saints are slow starters. Whatever they do in the preseason, it causes them to start slow. And whatever they're doing good things, right? And then they're going to lose a game, whether it's certain players on a team and their mentality, the way the Saints play football, that if you don't bring it, and I'm just going to use an example. I'm not saying. If you have a team, hypothetically, that just passes the ball nonstop, that's all they do, but they're really good at it. If one day the quarterback just decides, I'm taking this game off, then everything else falls apart around him. You know what I mean? So, but whatever the Saints do, it's not good for one game in the season where they just – somebody – finds that thing and they're not ready to play. But what worries me about that is so far we're in whatever it is, they lose in the playoffs in the first round. So that is a problem that we need to hope that will be corrected. And look, we don't have our starting quarterback. We don't have our starting Hall of Fame quarterback. We don't have our quarterback that I am 100% confident would have ate the Philadelphia defense alive had he been in there. There's no doubt in my military mind that that would have happened. With the way their defensive back situation was and the injuries and stuff like that. So sometimes to put it all and just, oh man, everything's over, when you really put in perspective that, you know, look, will Breeze eat alive a defense that has a good pass rush and good defensive backs? I'm not suggesting that, but what I'm suggesting is Philadelphia would not have stand a chance against a guy like Breeze. So let's put it, leave it in perspective. And I don't know if, we just got
the play calling would have been different, right? I mean, it was obvious that my first comment was, you know, in order to take advantage of these green cornerbacks that had to come in and replace the hurt guys, you got to throw the ball down the field to do that, right? I don't know of any cornerbacks that play 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage on a swing pass to Kamara or whatever.
Well, you were touching on something, and I don't want – like I was thinking about the exact same thing, so kudos, because what I was thinking is if you don't have a player, if you have a team – that their defensive line and linebackers aren't very good, but you don't have a good offensive line or running back, then you're just not going to be able to take advantage of it. And in our situation, just because their defensive backs were hurt doesn't mean that all of a sudden Taysom Hill is going to start lighting up, have the pocket presence. Because here's the thing. He has demonstrated he can drop back a couple of times and throw the ball accurately. But I feel like the Saints understand if you drop them back too many times, a bad play will happen. And that's just common sense. And so while you're over there taking advantage of him, there's going to be the one play where he doesn't pay attention to a blitzing corner or something and fumbles the ball. So the point is they obviously tried to protect him, because when they should have been going, and I'm not even saying far down the field, they should have been throwing the ball 10 yards down the field, 12 yards down the field. They were still doing the lollipop swing pass and stuff like that that wasn't taking advantage of the weakness of the Eagles.
Yeah, and not only not taking advantage of weakness, but you're literally bringing it back into the strength of the defense. I mean, when you throw the ball behind the line of scrimmage, right at the line of scrimmage, you're throwing into the meat of the defense. And so, but obviously Sean Payton, I mean, he knows that, right? It's not like I'm going to go tell you that today. He's going to go, oh, my God, I can't believe I never thought it, you know. But the bottom line is that he has to weigh the risk of that, right? At the end, I still got Taysom Hill that I got to deal with. What am I better off doing, swinging it out to Kamara or having him drop back and throw the ball down the field? We saw the answer to that, you know.
Well, and the thing about it is these are things that, like, to see, again, I can't bring these things up to you during the game because you guys hate, and I understand you hate these plays. Well, basically you hate any play that doesn't work. And the thing about it is when they do that, I agree with what you're saying, but I'm like, they're just protecting them. They're protecting them. They do not have the confidence to drop back six times in a row and throw the ball down the field. They don't have the, and it's not just about him throwing an interception or completing the pass. It's about, look at all the bad things that happen in the pocket, the sacks. And again, not all his fault. He drops back and pressure comes and he doesn't want to throw an interception. So he takes a sack, loses 7 yards. Now it's second and 17 and you're not going to overcome it.
Well, the fumbles, that's the thing is, you know, another guy, he could take a sack. He's going to hold on to the ball. Taysom.
Right.
Loses
right.
the ball with too high of a percentage. You
know? So when we get frustrated because every one of their defensive backs, they're literally playing defensive tackles at corner, and we're not throwing the ball, it's because, you know, because Peyton is weighing out the, listen, I don't want to put him in that situation. Then there's a lot of other factors too. If Peyton knows, listen, if we can see it, Peyton sees it too, and he knows, listen, I think he might think that Hill has more of a future than we do. And if you put him in a situation where he drops back and he just throws interception, gets sacked, fumbles, all these bad things that can happen, Peyton knows that that means that he's going to lose confidence and he may not be the player he could be because you continue. It's the same thing we talked about Burrows. You know, you get Burroughs. He's a great player. He's a great college prospect. You put him on the Bengals. They threw the ball every opportunity they had, and he did pretty well for a rookie and then got hurt. Well, why? Right. Because they didn't protect him. Right. So that's smart coaching versus dumb coaching.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a good point. And especially when you look at Cincinnati and the offensive line problems they have, to have your star franchise rookie quarterback taking that many hits. And, you know, that's a great point, actually. And so it's the problem is when you're watching the game and you get all caught up in it and you're emotional about winning this game, all that goes out the window, right? Because at the end of the day, I'm not an NFL head coach. And so,
rewatching the game, Heath, I was like, why didn't they run Hill right here? Why didn't they just run? You know, and I'm like, okay, listen, I get they want to make him a pocket passer right here. Throw that out the window, run the ball. And that's what happens. You start saying, we're going to be smart and we're going to use him properly. We need him. And all of a sudden it goes out the window. Throw every play, you know, go down, go deep. And that's why we're not NFL coaches.
Yeah. And that's what I alluded to earlier about not, you know, I've been a little surprised that there haven't been more designed running plays for Hill since he's been a starter. It's like they've almost purposely gone completely away from that. And it's a little surprising. And, you know, and of course, like you said, when it doesn't work, it's, you know, but man, trying to, what was it, a fourth down play? Whatever, and they ran him, you know.
Yes, yeah, like, no, it was a third down play. It was third one. Okay. And they ran them left on off the left side, and they did that power play, and I was aggravated by that because it seems to me the Saints have got – okay, so I'm going to go two different approaches because you guys are like, oh, that's so predictably sick. But when they run these little cute plays and y'all get mad, that's why they run them, because when they want to run that power and they have no threat that you've ever done anything other than just ran power off left tackle, then they load up and they come after it. As soon as that fullback went in motion, I knew what was coming, and so did they, you know. So
that was my thought. It was like, if I knew it was coming, I know the guy on standing on Philadelphia's sideline that's getting paid millions of dollars to coach the defense knew it was coming too.
Yeah, but then what they'll do next week is they'll run that fullback in motion, and Taysom will do this, and then throw a little screen pass to the fullback, and it'll lose 3 yards, and we'll be dog cussing them because they're trying to be too cute. But there's a reason they run in these counter plays to at least make the defense think about things. Because, hey, look, they were out there in the flats to tackle the guy. Had they not been, it would have been successful. But the next time they're worried about that play in the flats and you actually run the ball off left tackle, then you might have an advantage. So there are things that happen that when people start complaining about the play calling, they're not realizing, I mean, I get it. The play didn't work. I'm mad about it. But there are things they're setting up, and they know what they're doing. And sometimes I even get to the point where I'm like, what are they doing? But you just have to have faith, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I don't know. I guess we'll have to sit back and trust that Sean Payton knows what he's doing with these things.
All right. So do you want to break down the fourth quarter play where Taysom Hill, you know, rolled to his right and fumbled? And you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure.
Well, okay. So initially, I would have put my house on it that it was a roll to the right, speed out, meaning the receiver just kind of ran a quick out to the sticks. Taysom rolled to the right, which before I finish this, have you noticed I tease Breeze all the time? If Breeze gets out of the pocket, you might as well just throw it out of bounds because he doesn't throw the ball accurately when he's out of the pocket. Yeah, nothing but bad things. Hill has not demonstrated the ability to throw the ball on the run in any way. Like, he missed a wide open receiver, Sanders, in the end zone in the fourth quarter, and he I don't want to say was running, but he got flushed out of pocket. He was running forward and just tossed it, you know. Well, okay, back to that play. But after looking at it, Hill ran a quarter roll, meaning he didn't roll out all the way. He rolled and he stopped and he planted his foot, and then he looked. He obviously looked back. Now, the big thing everybody's talking about is he's looking right there at Thomas. And then some people said, well, he couldn't throw it to Thomas because Thomas was all the way on the backside, because they probably had the same impression I had. He rolled all the way to the right. He didn't. He just rolled to the right hash, and Thomas was on the left hash. But now what happened later, I was ready to bet money that he looked right at Thomas, and I said they ran a half roll, throw back to Thomas. But apparently Peyton was trying a shot play. So apparently there was somebody running deep, and I did not see it because the all 22 doesn't come out until Thursday. So I don't see the receiver, but Peyton said they shouldn't have done it. And he kind of hem and hawed and said he was looking for a shot play. So the idea, though, is I'll still say, look, you're a quarterback. If you look to the left and you see a receiver standing 5 yards past the first down, wide open, forget right. the shot. Go ahead and throw it to the guy who's open. So anyway, that's me setting up the play. Give me your thoughts on it.
Well, no, I agree with you completely. And this is news to me about the shot play. So that does bring a different perspective into it. But every time Mahomes runs around and then throws back across his body to the other side of the field, was that a design play? I'm guessing not, right?
No.
Aaron Rodgers, when he scrambles around for 10 seconds back then and heaves the ball halfway, you know, all the way across the other side of the field, of course, on a rope at 65 yards for him.
Right.
You know, so now it does change things a little bit in that it puts back in the context what you had originally said, I think through text and whatnot, that, you know, you're in your fourth start, it's fourth down, you're running this play, you get towards the sideline and you start to panic, right?
Yep.
Now, especially knowing what we know now, if he sees that the play was not there down the field, right? And he's trying to, so it's the difference between a guy, you know, thinking in that moment to look back and spot Thomas and make that throw back across. He's also got to be thinking, he probably realizes he hasn't had that much success throwing on a run.
Right.
And that it's usually the cardinal sin, right, to stop and throw the ball back across the field in any form or fashion. That almost always gets people in trouble, right?
Yeah.
You see Mahomes and them doing it now with regularity, and you think, oh, man, everybody. But
so
usually
easy.
That's disaster, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, that changes my perspective on that play a little bit now, knowing that there was a design to go down the field, and it obviously got taken away. And so then it was kind of that, what do I do now kind of thing. And that, and he didn't feel the pressure coming from behind him, right? The clock. That clock that quarterbacks right. have to have in their head, you know, with more experience, I assume he'll get to that point where he'll realize at this point, somebody has got to be getting close to me by now, right? I can't be
right.
standing here this long waiting to make a play.
Right. And then on that particular play too, you also had the fact that he should have had more time. Josh Hill, and you could argue Armstead maybe should have helped him out a little bit because he had no one to block, but it was mainly Hill who got a hand on the guy and then just basically let him run free. So there was absolutely no doubt in my mind Hill had enough time to throw the ball because this quarter roll that I'm talking about is the same thing that he did when he threw the touchdown to Sanders. So it's kind of like you because he's a running quarterback, I think the defenses flow a lot harder. So what they're doing is they're having him start a rollout, but then stop and set his feet. So he's not throwing back across his body while he's running. He just starts a roll and then sets his feet, and he threw the ball back to Sanders. Well, it seemed like the same kind of play, but that he missed Thomas or didn't. But it goes back to, again, the inexperience. I want to blame him. I want to say, look, right there was the game changer. And then you say, well, you know, if Hill would have blocked a guy for, you know, just give me a second and a half more, then maybe Hill decides to take off running and bulldoze somebody. Because I could sit here and tell you he's no Lamar Jackson, and hell, he's not even a Hurts. But what he is, he's a fullback playing quarterback, and he can truck a linebacker for a yard if he needs to. If you give him a running start.
Yeah.
Now, what I've noticed is, you notice how much easier he's being tackled, and that's by design. The coach is saying, look, don't go in there trying to kill everybody. Roll off a little bit. Fall down. Don't, you know, and he has an injury history. So, but in a situation like this is when you need to say, I'm not worried about that. Get that first down. And it's one of those things where it's frustrating because it's a young quarterback, and you saw the opportunity, and there were several opportunities. There were open guys. You could have ran the ball. You could have, and he just, and that to me, have you noticed, and again, I'm talking in general, have you noticed how you can have a quarterback play really well and there's open guys and he's throwing, all of a sudden the fourth quarter, he can't hit anything and he's taking a sack. And that's the pressure that builds later in the game with an inexperienced quarterback is all of a sudden, golly, if I don't hit this, we might lose the game. This is huge. Yeah. This is big. That's a big factor. And I think some of that is going on with Hill, where late in the game, it just starts getting a little bit too big, and it comes from experience that he's not quite there yet.
Yeah. And then you throw in the other mistakes that it didn't make it any easier on him. And so, you know, that's how you wind up with what we saw yesterday. You know, they're just, yes, he made some mistakes in those situations, or he I don't even know, call it a mistake. He didn't make a play when there was a chance that he could have turned something out of it, or however you want to put it. But there were other problems, like you said. You know, the defender should have never been breathing down his back like that from the beginning on a missed block. You know, you could go on and on. And when you get hit from the – so it's easy to criticize him for the fumbles, but of all of the kind of fumbles to have when a quarterback's get trucked from the backside like that, that's oftentimes when they happen, right? Breeze has had a number of fumbles in that situation.
Sometimes, Heath, I don't know how they hold on to the ball.
You know, so, you know, it's easy to go, oh, goddamn, another fumble. This dude fumbles that, you know. But, I mean, when you get clocked by a lineman or a big linebacker, you know, and you stop, right? So he's coming to a stop to try to look the throw, and this dude's running wide open and hits you in the back, and you don't know he's coming or whatever. Well, you know.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know? I agree with that. For the most part, that right there to me is what I would consider excusable fumble, and maybe other people or a head coach would say, no, let me that don't work that way. But to me, if the guy's running full speed at you and you standing there unprotected, I mean, I don't know how they hold on to the ball in those situations. Now, the other fumbles are not excusable, but that one, it is. I tell you what, we've been doing this and just so much to kind of just this free form that we've taken today. We've talked for probably over an hour by now. So do you have any final thoughts, anything that you just really want to touch on?
Well, no, I just want to see them pull it back together. You know, I want to see them, and I think they will. You know, they're going to come out next week, and they'll brush this one off, and they know they have a big game coming up this week, and I think they'll rise to the occasion. I don't know if they'll win or not. This is going to be a hell of a game. This is two really good teams, but I certainly think they'll account for themselves better than they did this past week.
I completely agree, and I would just be repeating what you say. I don't know if they're going to win, but I would expect to see the Saints' best, their best defense performance. Here's the thing, too. Let's also take a look. Kansas City, man, they're not beating everybody 47-3. They will give up points. The thing about it is that, and you mentioned it before, which I thought was very astute, is that Mahomes is not Jackson. He is not even Hurts. He is not a super fat. He is just very, he's athletic. He makes plays on the run and kills you more with the, he's running and he throws across his body perfectly to a guy cutting across. It's amazing. And like you, most people, they don't do that. Stop doing that. But he does it consistently and does it well. Yeah. And the thing about it is, but I think the Saints will have a better time containing him than they did Hurts. Having said that, you have more weapons on Kansas City's team. So, you know, you got Allaire, you got Hill, you got the tight end.
Kelsey.
Travis Kelsey. Yeah. The point is that's a lot more stuff to defend.
Yes.
It's going to be interesting, but I think the Saints will give them a lot better game than it's not. Nobody's going to roll over. The Saints haven't forgotten how to play football. I think that we'll see a much better performance. And now all of a sudden it's like, hey, if Hill starts again, there's going to be pressure on him because he's going to have to make plays. He's going to have to make plays. So,
and he'll he'll come out and play better. He knows he didn't have a good game. He's a competitive dude, and I'm sure he's going to come out and play a lot better than he did.
All right. Heath, thanks for coming on. And for everybody out there, thank you so much for listening to us. If you get a second, man, you might want to go out there and like and follow the podcast. We appreciate all your support. And for Heath Elson-San, Tomas Mauricio, Wesley Coleman, you've been listening to the BS and Beer podcast.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back.
And that's the way it is.
Everyone is a so dumb, bitch. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Ooh. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Ooh. Oh, boy, don't waste time to tune into our podcast. Oh, girl, give your time to Davey, Heath, and Tomas. We do this every